Spring is in the air at Littleton Coin Company, and we want to help you brighten your collection. Visit us at littletoncoin.com all month long to enjoy 15% off your purchase. With a wide selection of coins, paper money, supplies, and more, Littleton Coin Company has something for every collector's taste. Use promo code SPRING at littletoncoin.com for 15% off your purchase all month long. Restrictions apply. Littleton Coin Company. Serving collectors since 1945.
Our family has grown. Welcome to the world, Hannah baby. Introducing a new collection, Hannah Soft, made with Tencel. It's so breathable, with stretchy comfort for all of baby's first moments. And it's cool and gentle on their skin all year round. Entrusted Hannah quality for your most precious gift. Hannah Soft, made to last. Shop now at hannahanderson.com.
I need to tell you about this amazing product that I found called Dose. When I advertise things on my podcast, it's usually because I really do believe in them and I actually am a subscriber to Dose. And what it is it's a teeny tiny little formulated wellness shot. And it has turmeric, aloe vera, elderberry, milk thistle. It tastes delicious. I take one every single day. And what it does is it supports your liver. So we all know that I talk a lot about my buttery Chardonnay intake, which I really need to cut back over the holidays. But we all know that's a hard thing to do. When I found this product, I was always taking like milk thistle. I was taking all kinds of different things. And then somebody had told me about this and I am obsessed. I promise you they taste good because that's number one. But if you are interested in finding out more about Dose, you can go to my website, judgingmegan.com. And for your first order, you get a discount of 15%. So your discount code is judgingmegan15. If you decide to become a subscriber like I am, you get a total of 30% off of your subscription by using the code judgingmegan15 because they already discount your first order of 15%. So go on their website, dose.com. You can check them out. And then you can go to my website and do more research on it at judgingmegan.com. Well, hello, everyone. You know, I like to tell a little bit of a story before every episode that I do. I'm super excited about the episode I'm going to have today for you. But I decided that I have an addiction to Target. We're talking about addictions today. So I don't know what is wrong with me, but there is a problem when you walk into Target and you're like, I need shampoo or I need soap or I don't know what you need. And somehow there's something in the air in Target and you walk out and you're like, how did I spend that much money and what did I just buy? I don't know if like the circle on the front of Target has some kind of like hypnotizing something. I don't know what's happening, but I'm going to bring my guest Denise Klein in and ask her if she also loves Target as much as I do. Hi, Denise.
Hi, Megan. Thanks for having me today.
Of course. Are you also big on Target or do you do the same thing I do
where I walk in? But then they change the aisles all up and they move things around and they raise their prices. So I'm not as huge a fan. I'm kind of more of a TJ Maxx girl right now.
Oh, okay. Well, I've been into a TJ Maxx. So I can understand that, but I don't know what it is. It's like, oh my God, I never knew that I needed that ear cleaner, or I never knew that I needed, it's not a good situation for me. So I'm going to start by that. Any of my listeners, if they can relate, which I think people can. And the weirdest part about Target is like, why do I need to go to like to a party or anything else, because every time I'm in there, it's like a party. I run into somebody I know. So shout out Target, big fan. Denise is a big fan of TJ Maxx. So I'm going to have to hit up TJ Maxx at some point. And I am going to start this episode. I would like to introduce you and thank you for listening to my podcast, Judging Megan, with your host, Megan Judge. Today, we are lucky enough to have Denise Klein. She is the director of Milestone Ranch, which is a rehab center in beautiful Malibu, California. She is also the author of Truth About Rehab with Kurt Garby and Dr. Kadish. Denise, thank you so much for coming on.
Oh, I'm so grateful to be here today. And thank you, Megan, for everything you're doing for society with your podcast. Shout out to you.
Well, shout out to you. You and I were introduced through John Stenzel, who's been on my podcast, and I'm a big fan of John, and he has sent me some amazing guests just like you. And we had kind of been in touch back and forth for probably the past couple months. And then the holidays hit, and then I got COVID, and you are telling me you also got COVID. So it's like, Happy New Year.
Exactly.
Here's some COVID for you. But I'm really grateful that you're finally on the podcast and we can kind of talk about your book and talk about rehab. And it's actually very interesting to me because I have never had somebody come on before to kind of talk mm-hmm. about what rehab is. I understand mm-hmm. just because, you know, you hear about it and I've known people that have gone throughout in my mm-hmm. life. But I really want to get to the bottom of what Milestone Ranch is, why you started it, and I would love to obviously talk about your book. Okay. So where shall we begin, Denise?
Well, first of all, I'm so deeply appreciative of John connecting us too, because I'm all about decreasing stigma. I've been a social worker for 35 years. I worked in the nonprofits for, gosh, almost 17 years before I moved from Minot, North Dakota to Malibu, California. So there's quite a journey in there. And it was very different moving from the nonprofit into a private sector for-profit rehab. And so I started at Milestones 18 years ago. It had been started in 2003 by a social worker and another gentleman who owned the property. And then I came on board 3 months later and have been there ever since. And now my daughter, who's also a social worker, runs the rehab right by my side. Her name is Savannah Ganji. And she has her MSW, and we've been working together as well for 11 years. So it's just a labor of love. And really, you know, what rehab is all about is, you know, I want to destigmatize rehab because I honestly believe that there isn't one person on the planet who couldn't benefit from checking in to some level of health and wellness center, rehab, whatever you want to call it, and really looking at the patterns that are serving them or not serving them in life, and just doing a full kind of autopsy of their life. And that's what we do when people come in is, you know, they're self-medicating for some reason. It's taken them to a place where they're suffering. Otherwise, they wouldn't be enrolling in a program. They're truly suffering. And what we do is it basically, for lack of a better way of describing it, it's like an x-ray of what's driving these compulsive behaviors, whether it's substance use disorder, behavioral addictions, food addictions, gambling addictions, sex addictions. There's something underneath that is not resolved. And the body knows the score.
Let me ask you a question. Sorry to talk over you. I'm always fascinated by people that choose to go into a career or a life of serving others, which is mm-hmm. what you do. What was there something that drove you to get into social work and then to get into working in a rehab? Is there something that you went through? I'm always curious about this.
Oh, well, that's an interesting question. I rarely get asked. I would say that I started out my career in broadcasting. journalism. And I was a single parent. And for two reasons, I switched to social work. Number one, I felt that getting in journalism, you know, in working with that particular industry, it didn't feel like you were able to get that people were interested in the truth as much as they are in social work. And so.
What? That's shocking, Denise. I would never think that.
And that was 35 years ago. And plus, you know, single yeah. mom, and I didn't, yeah, you know, yeah. you would be on call to get out of bed in the middle of the night to go get a story. And it was like, you know what? I want to get to truer than true. And I want to help people. And I've always just been like radically curious about human nature and how to be of service. My mom had some depression when I was growing up, and I'm sure, you know, that subconsciously drove me to kind of want to help people smile a little more and be happy, because if mom's not happy, you know, you're not happy, you're sad. And so I really wanted to make a difference in the world. And so I feel so blessed that I chose social work, because I think the profession is just dynamite.
And you love what you do, I'm guessing.
Yes, I love what I do. I've been doing it 35 years, and I'm more passionate about it than I was when I started. It's just, it's so rewarding.
And especially right now, I mean, with COVID and everything that's happened in our society in the past several years, it's so important to have people like you that do what you do and live a life to like mm-hmm. serve other people when people are in their worst conditions, you know, mentally mm-hmm. or, you know, have some kind of addiction problem. Can you talk about Milestones Ranch and like what makes it different than other rehab?
If I'd like to bookmark just and go back a second just to what you said about COVID sure. and languishing. And I think there's a little bit of social worker in all of us. And sometimes we forget that. And we talked earlier about the dopamine spike. Well, there's also serotonin, which is service, sending a card to someone, thanking someone, reaching out to someone. And so I think right now, more than ever, we all need to bring those aspects out of ourselves, and we will feel better. That depression will go into a little bit of remission. The anxiety will decrease if we're being of service in our communities, because Lord knows everybody needs a smile. Everybody needs an elbow bump. Everybody needs something right now.
I agree. And selfishly, you know, part of why I went into doing this podcast was because I found that helping other people and talking to people and helping them, it's the best high mm-hmm. that you can ever get.
See?
You know, it's better than drinking. I enjoy a buttery Chardonnay, but I have to do it, you know, like be mm-hmm. careful with it, because I do, and I openly admit sometimes, and I have in the past in this podcast, lean on alcohol a little too much because I went through a great deal of trauma in my life. So
sorry.
I would love to talk about, like, go back to what makes Milestones different than other rehab facilities, especially mm-hmm. I know there's quite a few in Malibu.
Yes. The history of rehab is quite complex. And when I started 18 years ago in Malibu, there were so many wonderful centers with a heartbeat all over the country. And you almost couldn't go wrong with wherever you placed your loved one. And then slowly but surely, the corporations came in and bought up most of the rehab. So most of them are corporate run, which doesn't necessarily mean that that's a bad thing. They could serve more people than certainly a mom and pop private small boutique center can. But what happens is that you don't have the owner's eyes, you don't have the heartbeat in there anymore. And then oftentimes there aren't quite as many services provided. So what makes Milestones unique is several things. Number one, we have over 45 employees, not all full-time, for no more than 12 patients. We're licensed for 12. We've never grown. It's like the classroom. If the teacher has 12 students or 40 students, it's going to make a big difference, right? And so Milestones is predicated on doing what's in the best interest of the client. They get so many services, and we really, really do our best to provide unparalleled care. And then secondly, we're in a really interesting environment. We are on a big ranch. There are other activities going on around us. It's a little, almost like a little village. But we, you know, our section is walled off, but there's waterfalls, there's trees, it's very recovery centric. So that is another thing that adds to the benefit of the patient's experience is that, you know, when you go outside and you can just breathe and you can sit with your therapist by a waterfall and have your session, there's something that's really grounding about that and healing. And I wish that all treatment centers were in nature, because I think it's not the end all be all, but it's a big part of what makes us successful.
I agree. I mean, I'm a huge advocate of being outside, and my happy place is the beach. I walk on the beach almost every day. And it's so healing to me. Even in my darkest times, that's where I've turned to. So I think that's wonderful. And what an amazing location to be in, you know.
Blessed.
I would love to talk about the book. So why don't you tell me in a nutshell why you decided with the other co-authors to write The Truth About Rehab?
Well, it started with a vision I had for helping families, because at times like this, where there's so many bad actors in the industry, I wanted families to have a book that they could turn to that would help guide them through the process of picking out and vetting a good treatment center. And the book is not motivated by anything except to help families and people looking for treatment. And so I asked two of my colleagues who I really respect, who also had over 30 years in the field, Dr. Seth Kadish and Kurt Garby, to help me with the book, because I didn't want it to be just through my lens. I wanted it to be through other people's lenses who had worked in rehabs and really, really care about humanity. And so that's why I chose the two of those people. And it's been so fun working with them. And we're in our final edits and just hoping that we can get it out in the next couple months. And then we'll spread the good word.
So when you say that there's a lot of bad actors, I'm obviously, is it because rehab is turned into like a money-making beast, or explain what you said?
Absolutely. There's, you know, many reasons. You know, a lot of people go into it well-intentioned, and then they can kind of go to the dark side because they're bamboozled by the money. And so all of a sudden, their intentions change. And then there's some people who are just bad actors to begin with, and they get into the business because they see it as a business and they don't see it as a heart-centered experience. And so, you know, you have to really be discerning when you're picking out a rehab, because sometimes the finest websites with all the bells and whistles are, you know, going to be the people who are exploiting the general public. And so you have to be very cautious and do your homework before you choose a rehab. Because not only is it a commitment investment of money, it's a commitment investment of time and being vulnerable. And your loved one or yourself needs to feel very safe in that environment.
What is something that somebody that's obviously in the book, which I'm going to read when it comes out? I'm very excited to read that. What is something that a loved one should look for? Are there signs? Are there red flags about a rehab facility that people should know about that you could maybe tell my audience?
Well, I think that oftentimes if there's a call center and the person on the phone doesn't know who they're representing or what they're representing, that's a tell right away. If they can't answer the questions, if they can't give you testimonials, if they can't put you in touch with alumni, all of that would be red flags. All of those things would be red flags.
Okay. And obviously people are already in their most vulnerable place. You know, this is not a fun thing for a human being to have to go through, right? Trying to find a place because their loved one is so sick that they're a lot of times desperate. Plus it costs a lot of money, correct?
Exactly. Have you ever reached out to a therapist to make an appointment for therapy, Megan?
I have, Denise. Mm-hmm. I have, because I'm a huge advocate of therapists. Mm-hmm. And I talk about on the podcast, my therapist helped save my life, mm-hmm. Dr. Nay. But that's such a good point, because I have had horrible therapists in my life. And I've had a few really good ones, but in the past few years, because I've been trying to find like new ways mm-hmm. besides just talk therapy to like EMDR or whatever it be, it's kind of like dating, mm-hmm. right? I say that mm-hmm. all the time. You have to like, mm-hmm. you talk to them on the phone and you're kind of like, huh, it must be, like you say, it must be so similar when
you're in a vulnerable state, you're scared. It's nerve wracking. Mm-hmm. And so there's so many programs out there to choose from. It's wildly stressful for the family, for the referent, for the person looking for treatment for themselves. And so the one thing that I suggest that people do is ask 5 people in your community that are very well respected, you know, whether it's a police officer, a social worker, a nurse, a chaplain, you know, ask 5 people where they've had the best experience in regard to treatment and see what name comes up. And if the same name keeps coming up, then go check them out. And if you can, I go on site and feel the vibe of the program. So if I were to send my sibling or someone to treatment and I could go see the place, I would go walk in, see what's happening, because what you experience when you walk on the property is going to tell you intuitively if there's, you know, caring going on. Is this a program that is going to feel safe for my loved one?
Are there things also like people should be asking, like, this is just me not knowing what questions to ask, like, because I don't really understand, but would it be like, what's your success mm-hmm. rate? Are those questions that people should be asking?
Absolutely. 100%. That's a great question. So for example, at Milestones, we've been working on outcome studies with UCLA, and we can say unequivocally, that
the hard word,
it's the tongue twister. No, I can't even say that. Is that if it's longer lengths of stay, nobody wants to hear that because that means that it's going to be more expensive. But it's like any illness, and this is where I really want to destigmatize rehab. If you've been having a decade of substance use disorder issues, and you've lost jobs and you've lost relationships and you've lost your health and your mental health, 30 days is not enough. And so when we're doing our outcome studies, we can say that if people stay in treatment longer, they get to their underlying issues and they start to change their neural pathways. And then when they leave, they follow doctor's orders and they go to whatever level of care is necessary to keep this beast in remission, we're going to have some really spectacular outcomes. But if you go in 30 days, and let me bookmark it right there, we see this all the time. They feel better. They have nutrition. They had good therapy. They've been walking outside. They're exercising. They feel the best they've felt in years, but it's not enough to generally sustain recovery. And that's why the relapse problem is so high, is because it's like being in the hospital and you get discharged. And then the doctor says, now you have to decrease your stress. You have to go to physical therapy. You have to change your diet. If you don't do any of those things, any illness is going to come back. And so we need to treat addiction, whether you believe it's an illness or not, like any other disease, because it does impact the structure of the brain. And the brain takes time to heal. It does get easier to stay sober. It's one day at a time. There is no cure. There is no deluxe wash. It's one day at a time, because if you get the job, it's a trigger. If you don't get the job, it's a trigger, right? You want that Chardonnay. It's sunny out. It's rainy out. It's snowy out. There's triggers everywhere. And it's tough work. And addicts, you know, substance use disorder patients are the bravest people in the world to go in and really look at what's driving those compulsive behaviors.
Well, let me ask you a question. So what is that? What do you recommend then? Because I've always thought rehab facilities were 30 days. So what is the, how long do you keep your patients?
The way that you might remember that movie years ago, 28 Days with Sandra Bullock. Really, that was a really good movie, by the way. I got to go rewatch it.
I loved that. I loved that movie. That was a good movie.
You loved it too?
Yeah, I've seen it like multiple times. I'm a huge Sandra Bullock fan, so I have watched that movie several times.
We should it's watch a good it movie. Again. that was what insurance would pay. That's why it became 20 and 30 days, but it's like 90 days to change a habit. And so the amount of time that people stay at Milestones is usually 60 to 90 days. And then they step down into well-vetted, ethical outpatient clinics in the community. And in Los Angeles, we're so blessed because we have so many really good outpatient clinics. And best case scenario is into sober living environment. Why sober living? Because then you're around a community of people and there's accountability, there's drug testing, there's connection. And if you give yourself at least 6 months of that experience, I guarantee that the chances of you staying well for the long term are so much higher. And we can show that. We only treat about 110 patients a year at Milestones. And I can go back statistically and look at those people who did 60 to 90 days residential, did IOP, did sober living, and the outcomes are so much better than someone who just does it 30 days and tries to do it the hard way. Again, you know, keep this in mind. It's like any illness. It's like whether you had cancer or diabetes, you can't just say, oh, I went to the hospital for 30 days, now it's cured. No, the real work actually begins when you leave rehab, because then you're not in what we call a wraparound care of all these doctors and nurses and social workers and clinicians and paraprofessionals who are there to support you and prop you up and help you until you feel good enough to get up.
Well, what's interesting about what's happening right now too, and such a call for what you do. And I had no idea, like I just assumed, you know, somebody goes through it for 30 days and then they're healed or they're working on it. I know like people fall off the wagon very easily. The statistics are not great with addiction, but I love that you have like a whole path and it makes sense, because if you had cancer, you wouldn't go back to like having a bad diet, right? You know, right after you go into remission. So it makes perfect sense.
So if you look at it, and you have this visual of like an iceberg, and the tip of the iceberg is the substance use. So you mentioned Chardonnay, you know, having that buttery cup of Chardonnay underneath, what's there? So what society doesn't recognize, and we have done a really probably poor job of informing them of historically, is that what's underneath the tip of the iceberg, and what's underneath is trauma. As you mentioned before, mental health, depression, anxiety, you know, maybe it's a bipolar condition, maybe it's a thought disorder. Also, psychosocial stressors, grief, loss, maybe you unprocessed grief of someone passing away, a divorce, COVID, everything's underneath. We even have so many patients who've come in who've been through centers and they have had concussions that have never been dealt with. So a traumatic brain injury. And so what's underneath is what Milestones deals with. We unravel that like a little knot and say, oh my goodness, you know, let's look at this. Let's put the lens on that. So it really is like going into the hospital, looking at an x-ray, and then we connect them with experts. And that's very expensive. And people also get, you know, very concerned and worried about the costs of rehab because it is so expensive. And insurance companies, most of the time, don't allow the patients to stay in treatment long enough. They cut off their benefits so quickly. And so that's another, you know, chapter that we talk about in the book is the cost of treatment. What if you can't?
That's a huge issue.
Mm-hmm. Huge.
Yeah.
Shout out to Claritin for supporting this episode and providing us with samples. This time of year is the worst. I feel like I can't do anything and I can't enjoy my dinner because I can't taste my food and I can't work out because I feel tired and distracted. I can't even feel like I can host this show because my voice sounds like a duck. Luckily for those of us who live with the symptoms of allergies, we can live Claritin Clear with Claritin D, designed for serious allergy sufferers. Claritin D has two powerful ingredients in just one pill that relieve your allergy symptoms and decongest your nose so you can breathe better. I feel like I've been using Claritin D for probably a few months now, and I have really noticed a difference. I can work out. I'm not feeling like my eyes are watering and my nose is all stuffed up. I can speak without feeling like a frog has jumped into my throat. Ready to live life as if you don't have allergies? It's time to live Claritin Clear. Fast and powerful relief is just a quick trip away. Find Claritin D at the pharmacy counter. Ask for Claritin D at your local pharmacy counter. You don't even need a prescription. Go to Claritin.com right now for a discount so you can live Claritin Clear. Use as directed.
Our family has grown. Welcome to the world, Hannah baby. Introducing a new collection, Hannah Soft, made with Tencel. It's so breathable, with stretchy comfort for all of baby's first moments. And it's cool and gentle on their skin all year round. Entrusted Hannah quality for your most precious gift. Hannah Soft. Made to last. Shop now at hannahanderson.com.
It's a huge issue, the way that we treat our people that are sick or mentally ill or need addiction help, which obviously goes hand in hand. One of the statistics I just read recently was from the start of, not the start of COVID, from 2021 to 2022. So the past year, over 100,000 people died of overdoses. Did you read that or see that?
Yes, I did. It's so painful. And I just watched Dope Sick, that on Netflix, like painful to watch what the pharmaceuticals did and what these families went through. And that's what we deal with every day, Megan. Every day we get calls. In regard to, you know, people suffering like that. And so that's why we want to write the book. That's the why. We want to be on the phone with the families, help them. And then we'll say, read this chapter, you know, read that chapter. If you have questions about, should I have an interventionist? How long should they stay? What's the cure? Is there a cure? Because again, going back to history, some rehabs, they had advertisements saying there was a cure. So society was lied to. There is no cure. We wish there was. Nobody had the guts to say it's one day at a time on TV. Nobody had the guts. And so we want to be truer than true. We don't want to overpromise and underdeliver. We want to make sure that the public knows the truth about rehab.
Well, also it takes work, and you and I have spoken, and I'm going to talk about this for 1 second. everything that's going on in the world. And then on top of that, the homeless issue in Los Angeles or wherever you live in the country. And then obviously I had my guest on, Maeve, who's I still talk to often, and I know I'd put you in touch with them. And, you know, she's sitting here with her brother who is living on the streets right now and is bipolar and refuses to take his meds. All of this stuff goes hand in hand. And 100%. And I think what's the most devastating and part of why I started this podcast to begin with was, you know, putting my own struggles and my own like story of being suicidal 2.5 years ago. And, you know, like, do I really want to go out there and like tell people that? But I'm like, you know what? I would rather, because now I'm in such a different place because I put in the work. You have to put in the work. You have to put in the work. It's like anything else. If you're trying to get fit, you need to go to the gym and you need to eat right. You need to stop drinking alcohol, you know? But it's devastating that in our country, if somebody's sick or say you have a heart condition, you can go to the hospital if you have insurance and that will get covered, right? But you can't go into a rehab facility for 90 days because you really are sick. It's like having a heart condition, but something that's deals with our biggest organ, which is our brain. Mm-hmm. And we can't get help. You can't get that fixed. So it baffles my mind, right? I mean, that's just like a little tangent. I'm sorry. I like to get up on my soapbox sometimes.
Oh, no, it's so important. And you know that the homeless issue is so near and dear to me. And
yeah,
I think that, you know, in the future, we just really have to get outside the box with some of our solutions. I'm a solution focused social worker. So anybody who knows me, I don't like to stay stuck in the problem. It's all about what's the solution. There's always a solution. There's always an answer. And there's multiple answers that we won't get into all of those today. Maybe another podcast.
Yeah, you're going to come one back when we're going to talk about that. Because I know like in the future, I would love to have you come on. And then that's something that is very important to me personally. And I think if you live, you know, in Los Angeles, people tend to complain about it. And then when you meet somebody that really has a family member that is dying and there's nothing, absolutely nothing that you can do to help them, it seems it's so important that we face this problem with solutions. Like you said, it's one thing to just complain, be like, they're living on the street, you know, going to the bathroom on the street, doing all these things. But this all stems from what is the percentage of people that have addiction that are living on the streets, you know?
Well, the one thing that we can do is I've gotten connected with the Union Rescue Mission downtown and various other service providers downtown. And through milestones, we're also very connected with the nonprofits in LA like Tarzana and Clara Foundation. And guess what? A lot of times there's beds available and people don't know it. So one of my visions would be to create like a hotel app. You know, if you're going to Palm Springs, you can say, oh, which hotels have rooms tonight? I know there's rooms available. And so if we could create, that's just one tiny piece of what we could do. Oh, this person's finally ready, you know, to, you know, basically get the support they need for their bipolar condition. Okay, then let's look at the mental health facilities that have beds available right now that will take the insurance or not, or, you know, do a sliding fee scales. I also know tons of people who will take them in with nothing, you know, but nobody knows about those things. So I think we need to collaborate, we need to communicate, and we need to connect more in order to have stronger communities. I grew up in Minot, North Dakota. I said that earlier. That was a small community, well connected. I also lived in Colorado for a while, well connected small communities, Loveland, Colorado, Greeley, Longmont. When you come to a big city like Los Angeles, what's really different is it's obviously, you know, a city and there's so many people and it isn't connected. And I think if we start consciously connecting, that we can really do some great work for the homeless. I know we can.
I love that. I mean, I think it's a passion of mine to try and do what I can if there is anything. And right now it's just using my voice.
Which is huge, Megan. You're so brave and you're so awesome doing this.
If we had more people, though, that would stop complaining, and believe me, until I met my friend Maeve, I was one of them. Everything happens for a reason, which I say all the time. And anyways, I don't really want to go off on that tangent, but I just think it's important to touch on because it's one of the reasons why you do what you do. And it's about like helping other people and getting them well. And this isn't just a problem in our country. It's an epidemic, you know, just like the mental health or the addiction issues. This is not a problem anymore. This is an epidemic.
It's frightening.
Yeah.
And it's painful to watch. I was down on Skid Row and it's just painful. It's like an open air asylum, people walking around in the middle of the streets, you know, tents everywhere, rats crawling into the tents. I was just down there like 6 weeks ago. It's we've got to do something for sure. And, you know, and there are programs, there's programs all over the country that will bring people in for little or nothing. There's a program in Texas called Serenity Star. That's, if you can afford, you know, $2,000 a month, great. They will help you find a job. They have a restaurant there. They will give you employment. If you can't afford that, then they have funds available for people who can't afford it. It's magical. I mean, there's so many good-hearted people out there doing really good work, but we're not communicating the way we need to and getting it out there. So, you know, hopefully through the book, we'll be able to educate people about this.
Well, I would like to know, so at Milestones, you have 42 employees for every 12 patients. What are some of the things, and we can go back to your book about the truth about rehab, that you focus on? Like somebody comes in and they have situational depression based on, you know, what happened. Let's use me as an example. I come in. I'm not ready for rehab, though, Denise, so I'm not checking in.
This is an intervention, Megan.
Yeah, I hope.
You love it, by the way. You love it.
I know. I'm actually like, can I come? But I am going to visit you at some point because I, you know, I'm a big, I love what you do. So I'll come visit. Somebody comes in and they have major childhood trauma, whether it be sexual abuse, mental abuse, physical abuse. And do you start like when somebody comes in with therapists or what? How does it work?
How does it work?
Explain what you do when you check in. Like dummies for like, what's the book? Like dummies for rehab. Yeah, remember those books you read?
The
in
book
college?
Is yeah. It's going to be maybe even a tish on the dry side because it really is the nuts and bolts of the questions that you're answering because it's really important. And so what happens is this. So we have three admission workers and two of us, I do admissions, Carolyn and Savannah. So you're not going to get a call center. You're going to get one of us. And so if you called in and you wanted to know about treatment, we'd spend as much time as needed on the phone with you. Then you would probably come out and take a tour and we would, before you even enrolled, we would make sure that you were a good fit for our program because you really have to screen and make sure that people, you don't overpromise and underdeliver. So if someone has a diagnosis that another program is better at treating, like schizophrenia, that is not in our wheelhouse. That's not what we do at Milestones with a substance use disorder, of course, because we're dual. Then we would refer to PCH. That's their wheelhouse. So an ethical program will screen you as much as you're screening them. So that's number one. Then once you've decided that you're going to enroll in the program, then Savannah or Carolyn would do a full biopsychosocial assessment. It takes about 2 hours and it's 10 pages long. And then that gets disseminated to the doctors, to the social workers, to the entire team of clinical experts. And then they read that information before you even arrive on site, because the clock's ticking, right? And you're coming in and we want to make sure we're ready for you. And then you get assigned a team. So you would have a triple board psychiatrist, and then you'd have an internal medicine physician. And then you would have a primary care therapist who does the case management and the family systemic work. And then when you break it down into, okay, well, this person has major depression or is diagnosed with bipolar condition, then you would be assigned an expert who works on that issue. And if it's trauma, then you would work with someone who's either trained in seeking safety, EMDR, biofeedback, hypnotherapy, and you have a team. You have your own special team at Milestones. And so you minimally get 8 individual sessions a week. And then we have 18 different groups, process groups, experiential groups, psychoeducational groups on like relapse prevention, that sort of thing. So it's almost, think of yourself almost like going to college. You're getting all this education, you're doing all this processing, and then you have these 8 individual therapy sessions, plus nutrition, plus we have a wellness center where they work out every day. And then in the evening, we have homework assignments, and we have the other thing is sober fun activities. If you're going to get sober, you want to have fun, right? So we're always doing creative things. Now it's more internal, obviously, because of COVID. But we also, you know, when that mellows out, then we'll be back out in the community going paddleboarding or doing things that maybe they'll never want to do again, but they try at least a few times because they need to fill that time up that they spent a lot of time using substances or behavioral addictions. And so now they've got this wide gaping hole of like, if I'm not going to have that couple glasses of wine after work, what am I going to do with that time? The bewitching hour, we call it. So I might go horseback riding or go play, you know, soccer or, you know, whatever. All of our clients are so awesome. They all have different interests. So some like to bake, some like to knit, some like to read. And so we really encourage those sober fun activities. And then last but not least, we do a lot of vocational work. Some people are looking to re-career because their jobs are so stressful that they don't believe if they don't change their jobs that they'll be able to stay sober because they're using it as a stress management tool. And so some people re-career and some people are launching, and young adults who haven't figured out what they want to do. So if you're going to stay sober, you need something that catapults you out of bed in the morning. And so we have a vocational counselor who's been with us 13 years, Celeste, who is amazing, who works with them weekly on what their purpose and meaning is. So it's...
I love that. Do you have... And most people that come in, they don't come in voluntarily to your program, or they do? They come in with a... Okay,
50-50. It's about 50-50.
Okay.
And the one thing I will say is absolutely, some people are like, this is amazing. This is what I've been looking for. I want this unparalleled attention. I want a team that's only focused on really helping me get well because I can't figure this out on my own or through other centers they've been through that were larger where they didn't look at the underlying issues as deeply as they wish they would have. So that's number one. And then number two is interventions. I love interventions because I have so many people who are angry when they come in and then they're so grateful at the end. And they actually will say, I was waiting for someone to do an intervention because I felt so shitty and I was so down. There's no way I could have got myself out of bed to even look up Milestones because, you know, at that point in time, the anxiety, the depression, whatever was the underlying issue was like any other illness. They felt so crappy. They couldn't do it for themselves. Their family engages with an interventionist. The interventionist swoops in, helps the family, gets them to the right center. And I cannot speak highly enough of interventionists. Now, that being said, not every interventionist is created equal. So you have to vet them just like you do a rehab. You have to ask five people again, ask five professionals who work in your community, who's the best interventionist, who really cares, who's going to help the family even once they get enrolled in the program, who's not motivated by the money, but by the pure pleasure of helping someone get well. And that being said, too, it is expensive. So interventions are not cheap. But if you really look at how many hours they work, they're probably making, if we break it down, you know, maybe 25, 50 bucks an hour, if you break it down by hour. And they're worth every penny, a good interventionist. It saves lives. You don't wait for a disease to get worse.
Yeah. I mean, it's so sad when you think of addiction and, you know, people that are addicts. A lot of times, you know, like we just touched on homeless people, they, you know, even if they had the option for housing, that means they're going to have to leave their drugs.
Right.
I don't want to leave my drugs and leave the street.
Right.
So it's like they've chosen that person, that thing, which would be say drugs or alcohol, as their like they're married to it, right? It's like their greatest love. And to walk away from that is scary because they're so sick, right?
Yeah, it's a comfort zone and they physically and psychologically feel horrible without it. And that's why the other thing we do differently is we don't detox on site. We detox off site. And make sure that by the time they get to milestones, they're, so to speak, ready for school. And that really makes a difference because they're feeling so much better once they get out of detox.
What does detoxing mean? Can you explain what that means?
Well, detoxing is basically keeping someone safe while they're going through the withdrawals of getting off of whether it's alcohol or benzodiazepines or heroin, and making sure that they're comfortable through the process. And
so you're giving them something to keep them comfortable.
Yes. And
you give them, okay.
They do. The hospital will give them something to keep them comfortable. And people can have, you know, a seizure, and we want to make sure that they are not in the, we're in Malibu, we're 15 minutes from a hospital, and God forbid if something happened, we don't want that responsibility. And so we believe that it's best, they're best served in a detox center with full-time nurses and staff there overseeing.
See, that's so interesting to me because you watch the movies, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, like Girl Interrupted or all of the movies, the way that Hollywood like shows addicts and they're like sitting in a room and they're shaking and like throwing up into a pan by themselves. That's what I would have thought detox was that they did. I didn't understand that there's a way to do it where it's, you know, you assist in it so they're not going through the horrible withdrawals.
Yeah, correct. More human. Absolutely. And we always recommend a hospital whenever you can get someone into a hospital for detox. And there are other standalone detoxes that are really well run too in Los Angeles, but it's really important to have that process be offsite if at all possible. It's also triggering, you know, for the clients who are sober to watch someone go through that. So we found that that's really effective not to commingle the two. And then secondly, technology too. We're really strict with technology. They do get a little bit of time if they need to obviously Skype with loved ones or do some legitimate, you know, work while they're at milestones, but never during the day. We want them unplugged. We think that that's a big problem too in a lot of centers, that they allow technology because, you know, again, you're really trying to retrain the neural pathways differently. And if you're, you know, texting your boyfriend and text arguing or whatever, it's just a big distraction. So we always encourage people to pick programs where technology is extremely limited and monitored. And it can also trigger the cross addictions. You know, you might want to get online and start shopping at Target. You know, you might want to.
I know. I'm scared now after talking to you. I admitted my Target obsession. I'm joking. What do you find? That is a good question, though. I know that you know, some people go to rehab and then they pick up, like, you know, before they were drinking too much or they had a drug problem, and then they go to become an excessive exerciser, or they're a shopaholic. Do you deal with that kind of stuff as well in Milestones?
Absolutely. You know, the cross addictions are huge, and you really have to identify them early on, because again, look at, you got that space where you used to use your substances or your behavior addictions, right? Your gambling or whatever it was, your Haagen-Dazs. And now all of a sudden you have this time. So the, you know, it's human nature to go to look for something else that will increase dopamine. And so all of a sudden, you know, you have another addiction that pops up, or codependency, where you're trying to fix other people's problems instead of looking at yourself and saying, in your own wheelhouse and treatment. So the thing about the truth about rehab is it's super complex, you know, super complex, because as many issues are that are the same for people, there's so many underlying issues that are different. And we have this narrow time to go in and try and inspire people to want to get well, to help them get well, and to really convince them that this is something that's going to be an ongoing process. There's a saying in AA that's, you know, it's the one disease you have to convince people they have. So the minute they start feeling better, I've been there 18 years, so many people will think, I got this licked, you know, I got this figured out. And that's the slippery slope of addiction, and why there are so many relapses, is because people think they have it's in remission. It's going to stay in remission. And the other thing that's really important that we do at Milestones, and this is really a social work thing that you get taught in social work school, which is, it's called a conscientious continuum of care. So we anticipate that people might think this way because we see it so much. And so I call it an arm wrestling match. I'm kind of known for those, you know, trying to convince people that, yes, please go to sober living. Please do this because it will save your life. Don't take the hard route. Don't die on me. Right. And so what we built into Milestones is a free tune-up. So if they don't take our advice, so if you say you had diabetes and you didn't listen to the doctor and it fell apart, you could go back to the doctor free of charge for a week. That's what we do. We say, come on back. You don't have to ask your folks. You don't have to ask your partner. Just come on in free of charge for a week, and we'll put that aftercare plan together for you. And then the other thing that we do is, we don't want to make it about the money because it is so expensive, is on Sundays for the last 8 years. And before that, it was a different day. But we have a gentleman who does a free group for all of our alumni on Sundays to help them, see what went on during the week, what went well, catch yourself doing it right, what didn't go so well, so that they can stay on track with their sobriety. And of course, fellowship. I mean, I can't say enough about fellowship, AA, NA, Al-Anon, Smart Recovery, all of them. They're just wonderful. Because the other thing is, they're free. You know, why wouldn't you do it? And not all recovery groups are the same either, but find a fellowship where you can go check in and get support and connection, and a sponsor who gets you, who's going to call you out. And that's kind of the truth about rehab.
I love everything you're saying.
Well, I love what
I love everything you're saying. I love what you do. I love you. You're now my best friend. I'm just joking. I am so excited to meet you and have you on today. And I cannot wait to read your book. Aww, and I think a lot of people don't know, they don't know where to go, you know, or what to. So I think it's so important that you wrote this book and you're putting it out there, because I think it's like one of those things that people just don't understand, right? So I'm so grateful to meet you. And in closing, I just wanted to find out, where can people find out more about you? Like, do you want to share your social media and then also Milestone's website and like when this book is coming out? And I obviously, when the book actually comes out, will share it on my own social media because I think it's so important.
Oh, thank you so much. I really appreciate it. Well, you can call 818-879-9110 and speak to Carolyn, Savannah, or myself. As I mentioned, we're the ones on the phone. And then our website is www.milestones, and that's plural, milestonesranchmalibu.com. And my social media is just under Denise Klein, K-L-E-I-N. And if anyone has questions, needs support, please reach out.
Okay. And you're so kind, because I know you're the kind of person that says what you're going to do. And I know that you've helped and been in touch with somebody I put you in touch with. So I'm grateful to you for that. In closing, everyone, I think this episode is so important. It's information that I had no idea about. I know that I'm currently doing sober January, and I have not had a buttery Chardonnay. I did cheat one time. But I think that addiction is such a huge problem, and it's, you know, everybody knows somebody that has been touched by drug, alcohol, addiction, something along those lines. And I think we need more people like Denise in the world. So it's so important that you came on and you gave this messaging and you talked about it for my listeners. And in closing, I would like to say, be happy by making other people happy. It's how my daddy lived his life, and it's what my dad used to say, and that's how I close my podcast. And thank you always to all of you for listening to this episode. So in the beginning of the episode, I told you about this product, Dose. I'm not kidding. I hate when I'm like listening to podcasts or different things where they're like, go out and get it, and it's like, you know, a lip liner or like some deodorant that doesn't work and actually you still have BO after you use it. When I tell you that I use Dose every single day, I do. It's this delicious little shot. I keep the box, because I'm a subscriber, over my refrigerator, so it reminds me every day to take one. And I just feel much better about myself and my buttery Chardonnay intake by taking one every day. If you go to my website, judgingmegan.com, your first order, you have a discount of 15% by using the code JUDGINGMEGAN15. This is a one-time first order purchase. If you buy a subscription, like I have, you get a total of 30% off of the subscription, because your first order is already 15% off, and then you put in my code, it's a total of 30%. Please go on my website, read the disclaimer. This does not cure liver issues. This does not cure cancer. This does not cure if you're feeling bad about yourself by drinking a shot of something. But I will tell you, I feel much better about myself and more healthy when I take one every single day.
Our family has grown. Welcome to the world, Hanna baby. Introducing a new collection, Hanna Soft, made with Tencel. It's so breathable, with stretchy comfort for all of baby's first moments. And it's cool and gentle on their skin all year round. Entrusted Hanna quality for your most precious gift. Hanna Soft, made to last. Shop now at hannaanderson.com.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.